Google is betting on solar energy. Today, the internet giant announced that it's investing $168 million in a company building a concentrated solar power plant in California's Mojave Desert. Last week, the Justice Department approved Google's $700 million purchase of ITA Software, which builds software for airlines and travel websites. And these are just the latest avenues on what's becoming the Google Superhighway. That includes digital books, email, online shopping, entertainment, mobile phones, and more. The co-founders of Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, famously started the company as a Ph.D. project at Stanford. This month, Page took over as CEO from Eric Schmidt, who had been chief executive since 2001. Joining us to talk about that and what the future of Google means for the rest of us is Stephen Levy. His new book is titled In the Plex, referring to Google's headquarters, and he joins us from KAZU in Monterey, California. And Stephen, tell us, how have things changed at Google since Larry Page became CEO?
What's happening now is that Larry, who is approaching a middle-aged man, he's in his late 30s now, wants to take charge of the company again and really re-energize it. He wants to bring in a lot of new ideas to bring the company back to the kind of nimbleness and innovative approaches in organization that it had much earlier in its history. So already people say, well, April 4th, that was the day that the handover took place. But the handover really took place, from my observation, on January 20th when they announced the switch. Right from that moment, Larry started having weekend meetings and started thinking about new plans to have the company act as one instead of a bunch of fiefdoms, which was in danger of splitting into. So, for instance, one thing he does is he has this bullpen a couple days a week. All the top executives, the people who are in charge of the big different organizations within Google, literally sit in the same room. And they sit there with their laptops and they communicate with their divisions. The CEO of YouTube sits there and he's on email with people at San Bruno, where YouTube is located. And the guy from Android, the phone division, is communicating with his team. But then someone will look up and say, hey, you know, we were thinking of doing this. So you have all the heads of ads and search and Android and YouTube all right there. And they can have a discussion on the spur of the moment about what they want to do. And here's an idea they're sharing. And maybe if we could all work together on this idea, or I want your opinion on that. So I think it's a pretty good idea. And one of the innovations Larry Page has brought in just in the brief time since he's had that role.
Can, though, Google be as nimble as it was now that it's so big?
Well, the short answer is no. You can't defy gravity. But it's fascinating that in a company that values logic and data so highly, Google's future dominance almost depends on denying it's a big company, denying gravity, so to speak. They have to figure out ways to build in a small company mindset, despite the evidence around them that they're a very big company. And that could go to their advantage in being nimble and maybe seizing an opportunity or coming up with an idea that no one else has. But it could also be to their disadvantage when they're trying to take on more properties or go in a certain area and they run into regulatory problems. You know, you mentioned the travel thing. It took them months and months to get that through. So their size constrains them, and they aren't cognizant of it as they take on acquisitions. They're going to wind up spending a lot of time with their lawyers.
What do you think this recent travel deal really means for Google? Is it basically going to be another travel website run by Google?
I think that what they want is the stuff under the hood. They want to develop new kinds of products and integrate it more seamlessly with Google Search so they can get the information quicker there. They had a number of smaller acquisitions where they have things companies and people never heard of to enable them to integrate things into their data centers. One thing that people have heard of, for instance, is the Keyhole acquisition, and that's the mapping stuff. You see those maps on TV news, and they zero in on a town and a city and city blocks of something, and you can see what's happened when the tsunami hits. And that was pretty esoteric when they bought the company, and now they built it in to their platform. So basically anyone in the world can use that, and it integrates with that Street View thing. So it's almost the mirror world that they've built into their search engine, making it available. I think they'd want to do the same kinds of things with travel to build that in. So it's pretty seamless. You could be booking travel without even thinking you're booking travel.
But, you know, that raises some questions about privacy sometimes. The founders of Google have said that Google wants to be able to tell you what you want before you even know it.
Yeah, there's this thing in Google called zero query search. Right now, they're at the point where all you have to do is start typing a couple letters, and they're taking a guess at what you'd want to search at to save you the problem of typing, and they're actually delivering search results before you finish typing it. Even that's too much. And really, from very early in Google's history, before I started in the Plex, I was covering Google for my previous employer, Newsweek. I did cover stories, and I spent a lot of time with them in the early days. And in our conversations in 2002 and 2004, they were talking about this kind of thing. They're saying the best search engine is something that finds what you want before you even ask for it.
And nobody thinks that that's a little disturbing.
Well, it is disturbing in one sense. On the other hand, it can be pretty handy.
Right. Google has grown tremendously, but this privacy question brings to mind at least one of the missteps that it's had. And it has had some missteps in trying to grow so quickly. And one of them was in dealing with China. When Google did initially allow the Chinese government to censor searches, what do you think went wrong in China? And how would you describe that whole situation? Do you think Google will make a comeback there?
Well, I spent a lot of time on the China issue. I went to China three times. And you say it wasn't even they allowed the Chinese government to censor. In a sense, it was more insidious than that, that they couldn't get a license unless Google did the censoring. So they actually had to be instruments of censorship themselves, active participants in it. And that was a very difficult pill to swallow. You have to remember that Sergey Brin came over to the United States as a very young boy. His family emigrated because of government oppression and anti-Semitism, so he takes these things very seriously. So they did this soul-searching before they made this step of taking this abhorrent practice of doing the censorship themselves, and they figured that they would do more good than harm. That was their reasoning. They felt that by introducing more information and actually putting a little thing at the bottom of the page when they did censor, saying, you know, there's more stuff here, but we can't show it to you. They thought that that would make the people a little more cognizant of that and maybe demand better from their government. It didn't work that way. After they made the initial compromise, they were asked to make more and more compromises, and you add that on top of a number of cultural missteps they made. It came from the difficulties of dealing with an oppressive government that was obsessed with stopping dissidents, and it made for bigger problems.
Do you think that was Google's biggest mistake?
I think that was the crucible for Google. And to their credit, I have to say, after all the difficulties, they got out of it. They took the high road out. The triggering reason for their leaving China in terms of having a search engine there was that they were attacked. Someone, clearly the Chinese government is the key suspect there, was getting the Gmail accounts of dissidents. It was referred to as the straw that broke the camel's back. I heard that from probably a half a dozen people at Google as a reason. It wasn't all of a sudden they said, oh my God, they're attacking us, we've got to go. It was, that's enough. We've had plenty of problems here and we can't just live with this on top of that.
And Stephen, Google really became the giant that it is because it perfected the formula for advertising. How did it do that?
The breakthrough for Google was this product called AdWords, which was developed between 2000 and 2002. It was an amazing product because Larry and Sergey had this ideal that advertising should be something that people wanted. They should prefer to have advertising. And instead of advertising being basically a deal between the company selling the advertising and the advertiser who wants to bring customers in, and the people who actually see the advertisements are more victims. They're just the audience that doesn't have a say in the matter. They wanted something where it would really be a three-legged stool. Each leg is as just as important, and the users would be just as important in the equation as the advertisers in Google was. And they pulled it off. They came up with a way to deliver these text ads alongside search queries in your search results that people actually wanted to see and wanted to click on. And they did an extremely clever method of doing that whereby the people buying the advertising would get it cheaper if the advertising was better. Ad quality actually affects the price of the advertising. And it works so well that Google continually does tests to show results without advertising. And people like the tests with the ads better. They like to see the results alongside ads. They literally search more when they get results with ads than they do when they just get the plain results with no ads.
So what do you think is the next big thing for Google?
I think the big developments that we might expect to see from Google in the future have to do with artificial intelligence. Believe it or not, one of the more exciting things that Google's done in the last year has been the announcement that they were working on cars that drive themselves. And some people said, well, that's insane. Why would a search company develop cars? You know, develop a system where, you know, they help people drive better. But if you think about it, it really does make sense because Google is a company that's built on information processing, gathering the world's information, making it accessible. And the way these cars work, these smart cars, is that they gather information through sensors about their environment, and they draw on information from the Google indexes. They know it's around the corner because Google's got all this information from its maps, from Street View, and from their other services to know what's going on. So Google envisions cars and driving and traffic where all the cars are talking to each other, sharing information, and it's an artificial intelligence system. It gets smarter as it goes along, and that's something else that's baked into Google. So I think that this pretty exciting new opportunity that Google's made for itself really is of a piece with the rest of Google.
So smartphones are nothing compared to what we might see.
That's right. Your car will call you up and say you have to make a left turn.
Now, the co-founders of Google, you spent a lot of time with them. You've said they don't particularly like journalists, and they don't certainly don't suffer fools easily. So I'm wondering if you could describe why you think these two people were able to create this company. What were the key characteristics or the key parts of their personalities, really, that allowed them to persist and really come up with Google as we know it now?
Well, there's a couple things. One is they were young enough not to know what was impossible, what conventional wisdom decreed was impossible. Most people, at the time they developed their search engine, said, search is solved. It's over. We don't need a better search engine. As a matter of fact, we don't want a better search engine because in the future, the conventional wisdom was that everyone's going to go to these internet portals and the most successful ones were going to keep people there. And literally, when they tried to sell their technology, at first they didn't want to start a company. They wanted to sell the technology. They went to one of the big sites, and the CEO almost threw them out because he said, this is too good. I don't want people coming to our site, searching for something, finding what they want, and leaving us. So they had to start their own company because no one else wanted them. That was one thing. Another thing is someone told me at Google that you can't understand Google, and particularly Larry and Sergey, until you know that those two founders both went to Montessori school. And this is something which teaches you to question authority. Your discipline comes from freedom. And that's the way Google is run. It has this convention called 20% time, where people can spend a day a week doing a project of their own devising. But even more important, it's sort of freedom is sort of baked in to what happens at Google. The engineers don't get bossed around by their managers. The managers have to convince them that something's a good idea. The whole Montessori ethic really permeates the company.
Do you think at some point, though, Google will have to break up somehow because it's just going to be so big, especially if we start having smart cars on top of everything else?
Well, some things in theory could get spun off, but I think actually there's a strength to having a big system in there. And as you say, it's scary because the more information they have, the more useful it can be for us. But at the same time, the more concentration of private information about people is something that makes people uncomfortable and with good reason.
Stephen Levy is author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. Thanks very much for being with us, Stephen.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.